Okay, this is the hour. We'll take your phone calls with Linda. And if you've heard these strange booms, check in with us as well. Linda, what drives you? You just keep going. You don't stop chasing these stories. How come?
Well, I've always been curious about the world and the cosmos around me, and I can't imagine being alive and not wanting to understand the phenomena around us. It's always been, since I was a little child, the first thing that I wanted was a telescope, and spent endless days and hours out in backyards and on farms looking at the stars and the sky through a telescope. And that's the way I've been since I was old enough to walk. And I just can't imagine not feeling that way about being on this planet and in this universe. And I feel like that there is something especially critical about whatever is happening on this planet. You talk about it in some of the breaks, about there is something fundamentally changing on this planet. I don't know whether it's going in a positive direction or a negative. I'm praying that it will be for peace and non-war, non-violence, and cherishing life. But I think that there's something hanging in the balance where, as James Bamford said when I was doing the Coast interview last month, that his NSA whistleblower, William Binney, who was recently also on Democracy Now!, said that from all his 40 years working for the NSA, that he knew for a fact that we are so close to a turnkey totalitarian state that it should frighten all of us. So the future right now on this planet, in this country, around the world, is not guaranteed. Life is not guaranteed. How can you not make that your priority every day that you get up?
Well, so true. To the calls we go. Let's go west to start. Simeon in Newport, Oregon. Get us going. Hi, Simeon.
Hi, George, Linda. How are you guys doing tonight?
Good.
Oh, great. Linda, you're one of my favorite guests here. I know on there was a story a while back ago in our local paper here, and I know you were following it. I saw it on your website about the here on the Oregon coast, the metal boxes that were washing up emitting the strange noises.
Right.
I was wondering if you had heard anything more about that, and I will take my answer off the air. Thank you.
I ended up talking with a park service person about a month after all of the commotion, and finding out through the professor in the college there who had been quoted in that strange Kulik, I don't know, maybe a blog website that was reporting and trying to tie these metal boxes to UFOs and strange sounds, mm-hmm. and none of it held up. Well, about a month later, I talked with an Oregon person who works in the National Park Service, and she sent me photographs that she herself had taken on the beach of some of these metal boxes washed up under wharfs, and with the explanation that she was curious and she had tracked down that they had been the supports to a deck that would belong to a store up above the beach, and that there had been a big storm, and these metal supports had washed out, and that they had sort of, there had been some metal boxes. So it may be true that one of those photographs in that Kulik that might have been a real report. But the thing that really irks me, it's hard enough to try to get to the bottom of facts when we're dealing with Earth mysteries. It's very, very hard. And when somebody runs with something without really doing any investigation, just picks a UFO thread out of the air and sort of runs everybody up the flagpole with the story that was being written, when behind it all, it turns out, there was a storm, there was a flood, there was destruction of supports of a deck, and that there was some washing up of some metal things on a beach, that's completely different from what we were exposed to and kept me trying to find out what was truth and what was not. And that makes my life more difficult.
Sure does. Okay, next up we go to Roseville in California. Hi, Brad. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
Hey, I just want to say that you, I don't know if we're the same age, but I've had the same thing since a child, you know, telescopes. Anyways,
right.
Let me share with something today. I heard it was on CNN. Last Sunday, and I was watching, I saw this meteorite. It actually, I saw it. Anyways, these two astrophysicists from Northern California went and got it. Well, it has particles in it that they said are older than the sun. I thought that was so fantastic.
That it has particles older than our 4.5 billion-year-old sun?
Yes, ma'am.
Wow.
Silver particles. They had it in a plastic, you know, thing. They found two halves of it. I watched this thing come in because I have a telescope and really good military-grade binoculars, and I'm always watching the skies. But they found it. I was amazed.
Where did they find it?
Over where I saw it come in. See, it was in the hills up by Mount Shasta. And these two Berkeley astrophysicists, you could see the story on CNN. Anyways, and George, one other thing.
Sure.
Real quick. E-Foods, awesome product. I'm not doing a commercial, but I got it.
A live testimony.
I've ever invested in.
Yeah, they're good people.
As you think about it, you know, and it's not out of a paranoid way. It's just to be prepared. It gives you such a feeling of security, knowing that you can help those that you love, or even maybe people that you didn't prepare.
So true. So true. But, hey,
you know,
thank
anyways,
you.
Anyways, I love you, Linda. I emulate the way you think, the way you, your credibility is impeccable, and you're an awesome investigative reporter.
Thank you.
Right
thank
on, George.
Okay. There you go, Linda. How about that?
Well, I appreciate it because it's hard work.
It sure is. What's going on? Are you checking into the caldera at Yellowstone?
Well, you know, I have done periodic mm-hmm. interviews with seismologists there and at the Yellowstone Volcano Observatory. Gosh, I have done interviews with them almost every other year for maybe 15 years. And the last interview I did, I think, was about a couple of years ago about the swarms, that there were more of the swarms. And when you always come to that crucial question, if 800-some thousand years ago, that huge caldera blew, and it really blew, it took out what we would consider to be like something the size of a state almost. And if it did it again, because they think that there has been a cycle to the volcanic activity.
600,000 years, right?
Well, 600 to 800,000.
All right.
And we are either at that level or perhaps overdue. And so when there are these swarms, then everybody thinks, well, maybe this is going to be it. There'll be another caldera, and if it happened like it did 600 to 800,000 years ago, it's going to blow out such a huge portion of that Wyoming, Montana area, and there will be so much debris in the skies that we will be plunged into what Carl Sagan used to call a nuclear winter, where the sun is blocked out. And, I mean, it just becomes disastrous when you think about the potential. But every single time that I have interviewed the seismologists, they say there is nothing that we see that is a truly extraordinary out of the seismic swarms that have been going off and on there for a long time. There has been that bulge, and the bulge has arisen, and they know that there's a lot of molten lava under there. But the idea that something is about to blow and take out something about the size of a state, I have never felt that any scientist thinks that that is imminent. And I guess that's what we would all like to hear.
Let's hope they're all right.
Yeah.
Let's go next to Fairbanks, Alaska. Wayne, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi, George and Linda.
Hey, Wayne.
I've enjoyed the show tonight, and Linda, particularly all the different topics you've covered, but one caught my interest in particular, and that was the Fukushima power plant problem that the Japanese have had to deal with, and indirectly, rest of us on the planet. First off, I wanted to say that I thought the Japanese have done a marvelous job, politics not getting in the way, of course, of dealing with a horrible disaster. And you can only plan for so much. Now, they suffered a horrible quake, and the plants, the nuclear plants themselves, came through it basically in pretty good shape. The tsunami and indirectly knocking out the power, if I'm not mistaken, is what started causing the meltdowns. And so that being said, I mean, I think they did a, even though it was an older plant and, you know, all the different stuff you read from different engineers and depending on what your information source is, by all accounts, they did a great job.
Well, you're in a different world that I'm in. My most recent report about Fukushima was April 8th, and this included information that Fukushima, the amount of long-lived, highly radioactive cesium-137, right now is about 134 million curies in units 1, 2, 3, 4. That's roughly 85 times the amount of cesium-137 that was released at the Chernobyl crisis. And this is an estimate by the U.S. National Council on Radiation Protection. Further, if there is an earthquake that affects the Fukushima site, Unit 4 is sitting with tremendous amounts of cesium-137 water. And right now, this could result in a catastrophic radiological fire, and it could involve nearly 10 times the amount of cesium-137 that was released from Chernobyl. And when I did the interview with Arne Gunderson for The Coast last month about all of this, he said, in fact, that was 2 months ago, wasn't it, George?
Yeah, it sure was.
Yeah, but I've been keeping up on Fukushima, and a lot has been happening just in the last month. And the idea that even somebody like Robert Alvarez here in the United States, who was a former deputy assistant secretary for DOE in their National Security and Environment Office in the 90s during the Clinton administration, he is so concerned about what could happen with all of that cesium-137 that they know that unit number 4, it's about 100 feet above ground. It's very structurally damaged. It's exposed to the open elements. And if all that water gets spilled, it's really, I mean, it won't be just Unit 4, George. It'll be Unit 4, 3. 3 has been so radioactively hot that even the robots they have tried to send into 3 fail.
Yeah.
You can't get electrical systems in the presence of high radioactivity and have them last. And that's why we've got 4-3 sitting there percolating with huge amounts of cesium-137, very long-lived, very radioactive, and so are 2 and 1. And therefore, my feeling is that professor that I interviewed on Coast last fall, who has now moved his family away from Japan to Australia, that when people there have actually gotten radiation measuring equipment, what they measure versus what the Japanese government has constantly put out as falsely low, always trying to keep everything is better than it really is. We know that the radiation is so bad that there have been rabbits 100 miles from the center of Fukushima, rabbits that are radioactive. The animals are radioactive. It is a horror story, and that one of the big arguments still is, with all of that radioactive cesium-137 in the Fukushima power plants remaining, should they expand the relocation evacuation zone even further, because it's, I'm going to say what Arne Gunderson said, it's highly likely that there will be another earthquake that will crack open the Fukushima power plant.
Probably sooner than later, too.
So I don't know why the caller thinks that the Japanese government has done a great job. They have done a great PR job of trying to keep the horror of it all sort of, I would say, dampened down in relationship to the world, but it has been nuclear engineers in the United States trying to analyze whatever bit of information they can get and realizing this potentially is far worse than Chernobyl if these crack open.
Next up, we go to Tulsa, Oklahoma. Justin's turn. Justin, go ahead.
Hey, George and Linda, how y'all doing?
Good, Justin.
I just had a comment. You were talking about, the bees, basically being wiped out and the EPA not doing anything about it. I believe, they're doing that on purpose, and my opinion, is that they're doing it on purpose because they basically want to try to thin the population, and I believe they've been doing that for a long time. They just want to basically just, they think the population is too great right now. They just basically just kind of want to starve off the American.
Well, you are not alone, Justin, in that thought. Those who talk about the Illuminati and the one world government people, that they would love to get this planet down to 500 million from the 6+ billion that we have now. You just never know. I do find it ironic, though, that the bees die, and then you've got companies that sell genetically modified seeds. You don't need pollination with those, do you, Linda?
Well, I was just going to say that I think it's highly more likely that Monsanto, Bayer, and the companies that are making these toxins, they want as many people as possible to buy it all, and that they are driven only by their bottom line profits, and that there is very little concern for what is happening with the Earth's life that is clearly dying, not just honeybees and pollinators. There are so many Earth life creatures facing extinction now, largely because of this. We're taking away biodiversity by filling in land with cement and asphalt and buildings, and the creature life are struggling to find places where they can live. And in the meantime, I think when science has established biodiversity gives us health and strength. It gives any life health and strength. You take genetically modified crops down to 2 or 3 strains with all the problems that they now have with the systemic pesticides and the GMO crops, and you are faced with the potential that something catastrophic could happen and we would lose all that food. So I personally think this has been greed. This has been driven by greed.
Always has been, Linda. Always will be.
But we need to change.
Yeah. Yeah, we do. So what's new for you in terms of trips or traveling?
In May, coming up, it's a wonderful conference. It's the Dreamland Festival hosted with Whitley Strieber.
That's right. Yeah.
And it's at the Skerritt Bennett Center in Nashville, Tennessee, which is a beautiful, beautiful location. And that is May 18th to the 20th. And I have at the top of earthfiles.com a hot link to the speakers and registration information.
Right. So that date changed a couple times, didn't it?
Well,
it's going to be in June for a while.
Yeah, it had been in June, and it seems like it was moved back into May quite a while ago. But May 18th to 20th instead of June is the gathering in Nashville this year. And I hope any of you Coast listeners who make it will come and shake my hand, because I think that it is important, as you say, that a group of us anyway keep trying to share facts and truth with each other.
All right, Linda, stay with us. We're going to come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM with some final phone calls. Don't go away. Well, I'm completing my trilogy of Fridays at my daughter's wedding last week, and I'll be gone tomorrow. John B. Wells taking over. I'm speaking, by the way, Saturday at the Alchemy event in Los Angeles. All that information at our website, coasttocoastam.com. Just scroll down to the host page and see that I'm chairing a panel there. Then you will enjoy that. I will be back in a moment with Linda Moulton Howe and more of her phone calls from you on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back with Linda Moulton Howe. We'll take your phone calls. Fast night tonight, Linda, huh?
Well, yes, and George, I would just like to give a reality check on the man who called about the meteorite in the Sierra Nevada.
Yeah.
I have in front of me from the Washington Post The headline is Meteorites Found in Sierra Nevada, Likely from Giant Fireball Over Weekend, Not Known for Sure. And they aren't older than our solar system. What has been found, and there's a photograph, and they don't know if it is something that was previous to that fireball, but what has been found is a rare meteorite known as a carbonaceous chondrite, and that these really are some of the oldest things known in our solar system, and they contain amino acids and organic compounds that scientists like to look at and investigate, because they're always looking for signs of some kind of microbial life in these. So we may learn later that it is one and the same, but right now it's just that somebody has found a couple of carbonaceous chondrites, and they probably went up there because they were looking for something big, and they found these. So that's a reality check on that story. And the second thing is, I received a very interesting short email about a boom sound in Tiffin, Ohio. We were talking about central Ohio on April 12th. This is very close to that time period. And the man says, I live in Tiffin, Ohio, a small rural farm town of under 20,000. And one night, and he thinks it was around that time, there were two that happened within 10 to 15 minutes. One sounded like it was just over my house, and there was deep, long rumble that shook the house and went on for a number of seconds. The second was some distance off, but still rattled the house. There was a distinct metallic sound to it. It happened again a few days later, but I think only once, and then it didn't repeat again. It was very unique. I thought that it was close to the sound of lightning. Other people have said, like the crack of lightning before thunder, but it didn't sound like it normally does as lightning, and it was coming from above, not underground. I thought that was an interesting last sentence, because in the whole Clintonville, Wisconsin, and many other areas, people, including Lisa Coos herself, the city administrator in Clintonville, said that she felt the vibration in the bottom of her feet, vibration in leg bones, and other people have said that they have even felt ache in their bones from the rattling, which is coming from below ground underneath their feet with some of these booms. So there are, again, some people are thinking it's coming from the air, but many others who are getting vibrations in their whole feet and body, clearly something is coming from below ground.
All right, Linda, let's go to San Diego. It's Steven's turn now. Hi, Steven. Go ahead.
Good morning, George and Linda, two of my favorite people on the planet.
Very kind.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yes, the morning of Friday the 13th, I was in my driveway here working on my truck. I live 1 mile south of the flight pattern at MCAS Miramar. They had multiple F/A-18s in the air doing touch-and-go practice. And precisely at the moment, two of those FA-18s were going in for their touch and go. I heard a loud boom. A couple seconds later, felt what you would call a concussion from a shock wave, and there was a prolonged, low, loud rumble.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the boom and the rumble were decibels above the tremendous noise that these jet fighters make.
Wow.
And the storm was still 8 hours away from San Diego, so I realized it was not the thunder and lightning. And also, there was no shaking of the ground. The immediate thought I had was, well, we just had one of those booms and shakes that's been going on for months now.
And it was not the jets, which Miramar had said that they didn't have any aircraft that were performing at breaking sound barrier level at that
right
time. And I wonder, George, the caller, anybody, what exactly might be the physics of something happening that could be felt over all of San Diego County and also be felt on a boat out in the ocean?
Hmm.
Remember, was.
Yeah, I remember that.
That was the meteorologist from Channel 10 in San Diego saying that they got a report from people out in a boat.
Well,
I mean, what is going on there?
Well, that's an interesting... You know, you did a story, Linda, some time ago about that object that was in the Baltic Sea.
Right. That was...
Did they ever find out what that was?
Well, no. They're going out at the end of May. All of that was the advance. When I did the interview, it was why they have been mounting this research project, and they're going to be going out starting probably May 15th or 16th, so a little less than a month from now. And they said for me to check back with them about at the end of May to see what had happened and what they had found, which I will do.
All right, very good. Final callers here. Let's go to Glenn Allen in Alaska. It's David's turn. Hey, David, go ahead.
Hey, it's great to talk to both of you. I'm going to get through. I mean, it's awesome to sit here in my cabin by the fire and listen to Coast to Coast.
I love it.
I mean, yeah. Okay, so you know, it seems like it's like something out of science fiction. All these booms going on and like these noises coming through. And then we had the Norway spiral. It almost seems like these portholes are opening up. A bunch of ships are coming through. And then, you know, I'm looking at the comm trails going, you know, I don't know if they're spraying anything on us because they would want to, you know, get to us with water or food supply. But maybe they're covering up the skies. And, you know, they're covering up the skies because there's something going up there. And that kind of leads me to my question. I was looking around, and it seems like when I try to find a story on it, it goes away. But, like, the tilt of the Earth has tilted more. And I don't know if amateur astronomers are seeing this, but apparently the moon is off, and apparently Tycho, the largest crater there at the bottom that everyone can see with the naked eye, is supposedly shifting off. And like the Earth, you know, all of these changes with the weather, you know, and the jet stream and the oceans, and could it be that the Earth is actually tilted, and it's in the process of tilting? That's the big 2012 thing, is we're going to go through a massive tilt.
Well, listen, you've thrown a stew pot of things from the web together. Let's start back with the chemtrail mystery began back in 1995, 96, and we're at 2012. So it's not directly related or linked to any of the high strangeness that we're talking about now in terms of these booms that really, as far as I can tell, in the frequency and the metallic sound and the vibrating of the bones and all of that, did not start being reported, to my knowledge, before January of 2012. If somebody does have some verifiable report before then, I'm happy to hear it. But I'm just saying this is a current modern phenomena that is occurring as we turned into the new year. The chemtrails going back to 1995, 1996, I used to do an awful lot of reporting about that with Art Bell, because at that time, there were two or three videotapes that emerged from people because there were no iPhones, no cell phones, nothing like that was at play. If you had a videotape camera, then you might be lucky enough to be out videotaping the sky, and two or three people had the, well, I'm calling the chemtrail as opposed to the normal contrails from aviation, which has to do with dew and the temperatures and exhaust from planes. There's a very logical chemistry physics reason for why planes emit the white trails and always have and always will. The chemtrails were something different. I, myself, with Jim Mars, standing in a parking lot in Sedona, Arizona, I believe the year was 1996, and we were there to speak at a conference, and Jim and I and half a dozen other people had left the conference to go to lunch. The sky in Sedona was a perfect blue. We looked up, and all of us could see this enormous silver plane that had a bright pumpkin orange tail. We'd never seen anything like that before. We didn't know what we were looking at. But while we watched, standing in that Sedona, Arizona parking lot, this big plane began to move in a straight line and emitting very thick white something. And we were so astounded that we stood there watching while it made three or four of these lines, and then we had to hurry on because we had a commitment. And when we came back to our car, mm-hmm. the entire Sedona sky was white. That is the phenomena of the strange, what I'll call chemtrail phenomena, that I associate with starting back in the mid-90s. And further, in these videotapes that Art and I had received, there was one very specific one that I remember had a silver disc moving in and out of the white stream coming out of a large silver plane with a pumpkin orange trail. Highly strange. No one has ever been able to provide any, we'll call it an insider whistleblower or paper trail or anything on exactly what was that all about. Does it go on to this day? I don't know the answer to that. But that is truly a mystery that goes back to the mid-90s. And as far as I can tell, has absolutely nothing to do with the current 2012 beginning metallic booms.
Okay, it's Tom's turn now in Greeley, Colorado. Hi, Tom. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Linda, how you guys doing?
Good, Tom. Thank you.
Great show tonight. So let's talk helicopters for a second, Linda.
Yeah.
Did you get a chance to find out about that helicopter? Was it a military helicopter? What were they doing up there besides emitting a strange distress signal?
I'm trying to get more information from people. My understanding is that it was very small, and small could be a TV station helicopter. I don't know. But the eyewitnesses, who one is the mother of, or the mother has talked to me. I have talked with her firsthand by phone since this occurred, April 12th. And she has a home that is near Bath, and her son, who is a grown man, was there in town and saw the helicopter, saw the silver disc above the helicopter, and then was stunned when one of the Typhoon jets, which I understand one came in first and then a second later. But so that is an eyewitness that is coming to me through somebody I've known for 20 years in England and just happens to have been her son. The, we'll call it the stalking, which I think is clearly ionization in some kind of a pattern of an object. Maybe it was moving and it looks like that because it was a cell phone or an iPhone that captured it and there was motion of ionization in that photograph shaped like a stalking. The question is, was the helicopter, and everybody says it was small, was the small helicopter innocently doing something over Bath, Somerset, England, like working for a TV station? Or was it a military helicopter that maybe was first called out to investigate a signal that might have come into the UK MOD from satellite or something else? And then the helicopter was confronted with the silver disc and apparently some sort of transformation, I'm assuming, but do not have proof, that the ionized stalking pattern came before or after the young man saw clearly the silver disc. And we have all kinds of transformations like that reported around the world every month of every year. Whatever these are, they can use ionization to cover up, change, who knows. So that might mean that whoever was in that helicopter for whatever reason may have felt threatened, been afraid, confused, hit the emergency alarm that then had the MOD scramble the two Typhoon jets. And then there were other eyewitnesses that have talked to the BBC and to Sun and to others who watched in amazement and were puzzled because according to those eyewitnesses, the two typhoons came and circled very slowly, very tightly around this small helicopter without any comment about whether there was a silver disk or the stocking-shaped ionization there in the sky at the same time. It sounds like that there were that there's an evolution in a timeline, whether it took place over a minute or two or five. And it's also worth underscoring that the original communication to the MOD was their confusion that they said they were investigating to find out what the loud boom sound was that was heard over five counties ranging from Somerset to Wiltshire, Warwickshire, Oxfordshire, West Midlands. That's the area of southern England where all of this noise was heard. And then later, the MOD says, oh, the boom that everybody heard were these jets that we scrambled because the little helicopter had sent out an emergency signal. And I think that you all would agree with me that there is something very strange about all of this, and that it was easier for them to throw out that the boom was caused by the sound barrier being broken by those two jets, when in fact, the truth may be they didn't know what the boom was originally, and they were honest. And then later, they've got a story that's involving something unidentified in the air, seen by more than one, the odd photograph, and the odd behavior of those jets. And what exactly did happen on April 12th in Bath, England, that was followed just a few hours later in central Ohio with the big boom there, no military confirmation of sound barrier being broken, and then just a few hours later on the Pacific coast in Lacey, Washington, multiple metallic booms like you would throw metal into a metal dumpster going on till 3 o'clock in the morning, and then at 8:45 a.m. in San Diego County and out on the water, a huge boom. And then the next day in Columbia, Missouri, something that sounded like a train slamming into a stone wall. George, this is bizarre.
The whole thing is. Linda, thanks so much. Great reports. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasur, Stephanie Smith, George Knapp, John D. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.